You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio 96.5 LPFM and streaming live at WSLR.org. My name is Emily Burno, and I'm on the phone today with a very interesting guest, Miriam Delicado. And Miriam has written a book, Alien Blue Star, Fulfilling Prophecy, about her encounter with what she describes as tall blonde aliens. So good morning, Miriam.
Good morning, and thank you for having me, Emily.
So, perhaps just as a beginning, could you tell us maybe just a little about yourself and your family background?
Well, I grew up in northern British Columbia, Canada, and come from a rather small family, just myself, two sisters, mom and dad. They were both European background, so I had very interesting meal plans, one might say. And, you know, the beginning of my life was in some ways very normal, and in other ways it was quite different because of my father. He was a highly intelligent man who always seemed to gear towards things like holistic healing, herbs, this type of thing. So in one way it was very normal, and in another it was a little bit different for the times. And growing up, you know, I had difficulties in my life the way that most people do in these times. And I left home at a young age to move to the big city of Vancouver at the age of 19, and shortly thereafter, I had my main encounter with these tall blonde aliens.
Now, you mentioned main encounter, which we will definitely get to. That is what your book is about. But you also, in reading your book, which is a fascinating story, at I think it was the age of 4, you and your sister both experienced some alien contact as well.
Yes, that particular contact, even for me today, is one of the most fascinating parts of what I've shared in that book. This particular incident was not in my mind at all at 22. Uh-huh. It was completely, you know, non-existent. It wasn't until after I had this encounter in 1988, at the age of 22, when this memory came back to me, and it was extremely clear and detailed. And what is fascinating about this incident is that my sister also remembers the exact same details as I did.
Now, did you both only remember later on, or was it something that just faded as you grew up?
Well, for myself, the memory came back to me very clearly in 1988 and stayed with me. Mm-hmm. For my sister, when I asked her initially at that time in 1988-1990, I said, do you ever remember anything strange? She let go of one very small detail, meaning she remembered a light over this farmhouse, and that was it. Now, her memory sort of faded in and out for years until finally in 2005, the full memory of this particular event came into her consciousness and actually stayed with her. And what would happen is I would ask her a question, say, do you remember something, anything strange? She would say yes, and then give me a detail, or she would say no, not at all. And I would never expand, but if it was a time when she remembered, it would always be that she would remember just the tiniest, expanding more on the details. So, for example, first she remembered a light, then she remembered nothing. Then she remembered a light, and then she remembered standing in the field, and then nothing. And it just continued like this until 2005, when the whole memory came back of the two of us leaving the house in the middle of the night. I was 4 years old, that would have made her 9. And we walked out into the farmer's field. She was trying to stop me from leaving, and I wouldn't listen to her. And we were standing in the farmer's field, and across the field was this big craft, obviously, great big bright light above this shed. And so then what happened was a blue ball of light came flying out of this craft, came over to me in literally a millisecond, in the blink of an eye, and it was a fair distance, and stopped and sort of went down my body and then up my body as if it was scanning me, went over to my sister, did the same thing, then went to her forehead, beamed her into the, in the head with some blue light, and she just turned around and walked away.
Interesting. That, so, and that's, and from that point on, she didn't remember anything until years and years later.
Correct.
And then what happened to you after that?
Well, at that point, I was taken on board the craft, and I had interactions with these tall, blonde aliens, otherwise known as by many other names, star beings, ancestors, all sorts of names go out to these beings. And I'm not sure how long I was with them. I had an experience that I remember that was very painful, where they put some sort of almost like needles into both of my arms, and it was very painful. I remember screaming in agony. And they told me that they were changing my blood, that they were doing something to my blood. And when I was asking them why they were doing that, they said that it was to protect me from diseases that may be coming in the future. And when they spoke to me, they would tell me, you know, it's okay, you know, stay calm, you're all right, you're okay. It would almost as if calm me down and take this pain away as well. So the experience itself was not comfortable, but it was not torturous, and they were doing something that was for my benefit in the end. So I'm quite comfortable with it.
And do you know how long you were with them at that point?
I really do not have a clue how much time I was with them on that particular journey. Not at all. What I do know is that it could have been anywhere from half an hour to all night long. Mm-hmm. I'm really not sure. Because the memories, the way that they came back, they came back in sort of flashes and images, and not in a consecutive manner, the way that we live in this reality when we're thinking back on having a lunch date with someone, you know, the way that we're remembering a set of circumstances. This is quite different when you're remembering your time with these beings. It's always broken up. And I think part of the reason is because the high-frequency energy that they emit makes it difficult for us to be able to put timelines on where it is that they're from and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like it's trying to meld, you know, electricity in a human body. It doesn't quite work. So it's difficult to remember exact details from every single moment that you're with them. That's my own personal take on it.
So this happened when you were very young, and then to your knowledge or recollection, the next real encounter that you had was again years later when you were 1988?
Yes, I did have two events that took place in between there, when I was approximately 9 years old, 9-10 years old, and then again when I was 16. They are very vague. All they are is just little memories of things that didn't quite fit into place. I had some time loss when I was 16, and out on a country road. And at that time, we were seeing meteors falling to the earth. But as soon as they came to the earth, they would change direction and travel parallel to the earth. And that's the last thing I remember. So that particular event, I have no memory of what happened. And just the smaller details, like the car was cold. The people that were with me, the two men that were with me, we didn't talk on the way back into town. We were sort of dazed almost. So there was a couple of other events. And then in 1988, I had this major encounter that completely awakened me and helped me to remember and put together all of these pieces from when I was 4 years old, 9, 16, and to really make sense of a number of things that were surrounding my life. For example, my father and his, I felt that he was involved somehow simply because he was brilliant. He was, you know, often talking about some of the same information that these beings had shared with me. And he also had very strong psychic abilities, which I also learned was one of the traits of people like myself.
So when you had the experience when you were 22, and now looking back on it, does it feel like it was the same beings or, you know, like the same kind of craft that you went in as when you were very young?
Absolutely. It all feels the same to me, and there's pieces that I remember from when I was four, and then again when I was 22. Those two events, I would say definitely it was the same beings because I remember them. They were very tall, almost 7 feet tall, with white hair, absolutely white hair, and brilliant blue eyes. So in both those cases, the craft from when I was 4 years old, I don't remember the details of it other than the fact that there was a lot of light emanating off of it. But the beings inside were definitely the same. There's no question of that for me.
And so you describe them as being very, very tall and having white hair. And physically, did they seem to have like a solid body like ours and the same kind of physical body?
Yes, they did. It wasn't as though, you know, they were projected in any way. The beings, the small beings that I saw that took me on board the craft when I was 22, these small beings with round black eyes, they were almost childlike in a way. They actually physically took me by the hand. And I remember that.
And how did that feel? Was it a strange feeling?
Well, it was, because they were cold. And they were very, very cold, like icebox cold, it felt like. There didn't seem to be any warmth the way that you would, if you grabbed a human hand, it would be warm. I don't remember the tall blondes touching me, so I can't say what they felt like. But these other ones that were with them definitely had substance and were solid.
And when you were with the blonde beings, was there a feeling of sort of warmth or empathy from them, or was it like a total alienation?
Actually, the feeling that they project is one that is really almost indescribable, because it's so much love. And I've often tried to think how I could explain this, but it is a caring, a love, a connection that goes so far beyond words. And when you eventually allow yourself to become part of this whole process of what's taking place with them, they will actually send you all of this energy to explain themselves and show who they are from their hearts. So I felt very loved by them,
so
very
there was,
much so.
There was no fear then?
There was definitely a certain amount of fear when that car in 1988 stopped on the side of that highway. Absolutely. But was I terrified? I think that there's a distinction that can be made there between fear and terror. Fear is something that happens when we don't know what's going on, which I certainly didn't. I wasn't all jumping out of the car going, yay, you're here. I was saying, what's going on? You know, why am I doing this? Where am I? What am I doing? So I did have a certain amount of fear, wondering what was going on, but I wasn't to the point of terror. No, there was no terror there. And then once I actually laid eyes on the tall blondes, my first reaction in my own mind was, what are you doing here? Why can't you leave me alone? And some people interpret that in a way that, well, they were harassing you. Well, I don't see it that way. I see it more like, you know, maybe a parent telling a child that it's time to come into the house for dinner, and the child doesn't listen. You know, it's just a relationship that you have that they do have more knowledge than us in some ways. They do have an understanding of life, of the universe, and of ourselves as human beings in a way that we don't here. And so if they are superior, they do not project that as in we are superior to you, therefore you must listen to us. It is simply a sharing. And that in itself is something that you pick up on when you're with them. So why can't you leave me alone? Maybe they'd ask me or talk to me times before that I don't remember, and asking me to do something or, you know, simply wanting to share more with me, and me just being irritated with them. Do you understand what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people, you know, a lot of us, I think all over the world, have always had a feeling of not belonging here, and that, you know, we come from somewhere else. When you were with these beings, or when you look back on it, did you have a feeling of sort of kinship with them, or that you were home or with family?
Absolutely. I felt a knowingness, an understanding, and an acceptance, maybe not an acceptance, but a knowingness that was so deep and profound. I do not have children myself. So, but what I can, you know, imagine is that for me it was a relationship like that, like a parent and a child. There was that kind of a bond between us. And I love them. I do love them. And they are quite beautiful and remarkable. And I long to be with them all the time. But that is not possible. And I love this life. And it's an incredible life. But I feel all my life I've had this longing that I didn't understand. And then after I met them in 88 and they shared with me all of this, you know, everything that they did, I then understood what this longingness was all about for this family that I thought was out there somewhere. And yes, I do believe that they're my family. Completely.
How did they communicate? Was it verbally or pictures or through telepathy or what?
They always communicate through telepathy,
mm-hmm.
and the telepathy works so that you will receive words in your head, or you can receive images in your mind from them directly. The other way that they communicated with me that day in 88 was a screen that popped up in the middle of the room out of thin air, and images were placed on that. And then while these images were coming up in front of me, massive amounts of information was sort of being shared in my mind.
So after you had your encounter, you came back and then went back about your life. Now, you mentioned also that at some point after that, you were approached by, I think, some Russians or someone to work with the Russians. How did they know about your encounter? Did you ever find that out? Or how did they know about you?
That is such a convoluted set of circumstances. I don't know how they found out about me, but to explain to the viewers or listeners what happened was, I was working in a yogurt shop, selling yogurt. See, living a very normal life in that way, and at the same time, all these strange things going on. It's like a two-sided life I live. And this man completely walked in off the street and with no hesitation, just direct eye contact, walked right up to me and said, do you work for the CIA or the FBI? And I said, no, I don't. Have you ever? I said, no. He then said, have you ever thought about working for the Russians? And he went into a little bit of detail talking about how the Russians at that time had a program where they worked with people like myself who had gifted, you know, abilities in all different forms, and that I would be with family, people who understood me, people who could help me to focus my abilities and so forth. And I just basically said no thank you. And it was interesting because I remembered a story my father used to tell me on way back when I was a kid, saying to me that he called it the Russian psychic army. He said, if they ever come to you, don't ever go with them. Because he had been approached by them as well. And so what is interesting is that in this particular story, I really don't know how they found me for sure. I have some, I suspect a little bit that there was some individuals that I was talking to at the time that may have been involved with the Russians, but I don't know for sure. All I know is that, you know, I was 22 and very taken aback by all of this, these strange events and occurrences that were happening around me. And when that man showed up to ask me to go and work for the Russians, I must admit that at that time I was very nervous. And if the same thing happened today, I wouldn't have the same attitude, but back then it was very overwhelming.
Now, you also, and one of the most fascinating things that stuck in my mind in your book was, same thing, I think, when you were still working in the yogurt shop, and you describe how this very tall blonde woman comes into the yogurt shop and sort of beelines for you. And you describe her as being one of the ugliest people you've ever seen. Yet, whenever we hear, and in fact, you also described the tall blonde aliens as being very attractive. Do you think that is a sort of just a something they project to us to make them more acceptable to us, so that we're just seeing what we would find attractive? Do you know what I mean? Rather than seeing their actual physical form, which perhaps you did see when she came into the shop, but when people have encounters on UFOs or whatever, to make it less scary or less weird, they project themselves as more attractive to us?
You know, no one has ever asked me that question before, and I thank you for asking me.
So, I've been dying to know the answer.
You know, I have thought about that myself and said, was it a projected image of these, of them being beautiful? I am not sure of either one of those things. Like, for example, when this blonde came into the yogurt shop and I said she was the ugliest woman you'd ever seen, I don't, you know, even for me looking back on it, the image itself, like the eyes were incredibly beautiful. The eyes were absolutely beautiful. But the face, there was something wrong with the face, and I think, I don't know if it was because the projection was supposed to be of a tall, beautiful woman, and so they were wearing some sort of disguise or what the situation was. It looked like she was wearing a mask, and so the mask looked ridiculous, and that's what I remember, and thinking she was so ugly, though, you know, meaning she was completely different than what a normal human being would look like in her entire appearance, her hair, her cheekbones, how large her eyes were, a little bit of a thinner chin. So it's really difficult for me to say, but I have actually thought of that as well. And my conclusion has always been that it is possible that the one that came in to see me in the yogurt shop was not necessarily from the same group, meaning the exact same group that picked me up on the highway. Mm-hmm. So there could be the possibility that these were two different groups, because I was told that there are a number of different groups that are working together, and yet they're not sort of, you know, directly related. It's as though they're all cousins working together. So to me, there is the possibility of any of those things. And I know that doesn't clarify anything, but this is such a complicated subject matter. And even for myself, this is why throughout my entire book I say I'm questioning everything all the time. Now, the woman in the shop, she looked like, you know, she had a blonde, she looked like she had a blonde wig on or something on top of her head. And yes, it was very strange. So was it the same group? I didn't get that sense that it was the exact same group, meaning the same ones that picked me up in the highway. It wasn't one of them. I know that because I would have recognized them as being one of the beings that was on the craft in 1988 when I was taken. So, not sure if it was even the same group.
You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio, and we're also streaming live at WSLR.org. My guest today is Miriam Delicado, and Miriam wrote a book, Alien Blue Star, Fulfilling Prophecy, about her encounters with tall blonde aliens and her experience on a UFO ship. Miriam also has a website, alienbluestar.com, if you want to check it out, and you can also find the book on there. We're going to take a short music break, and then we'll be right back talking to Miriam. Okay, so Miriam, we just played a song that you requested by Seal, Dreaming in Metaphors. Is that a song that has a significance for you?
I love the artwork of Seal, because his songs are very, for some reason, they just touch my heart. And Dreaming in Metaphors is a song I listen to often, because really that's what life is about. It's about metaphors. It's about trying to determine whether this life is a dream or the dreams are dreams. And I think that that's part of what we do in this life, is simply walk in different worlds at the same time. And it's up to us to be able to sort of be able to see clearly where it is that we're going and what we're doing through these metaphors in life. And the song also talks about, you know, opening our hearts, and that we have the ability to create a peaceful world if we only choose to do that.
Miriam, we talked earlier a bit about the actual encounter that you had with the aliens. Now, that happened in 1988, and it took you how many years to actually decide or bring yourself around to writing the book?
For the first couple of years after the incident in 88, things were very overwhelming, and so many incidents, so many small things, big things took place that were difficult for me. People would come into my life, I wouldn't know who they were. Researchers, other contactees, abductees, all sorts of very interesting people. However, in all of that was a darker side that was taking place, where all of my mail was getting ripped open. So every time I got an envelope in the mail, I'd go to my mailbox, open it up, and my mail would literally be ripped open and then blatantly taped back up with this awful, tape job. So it was very intentional. And this wasn't just one thing. It was every single envelope that came to my house.
So it was done really as an intimidation. It wasn't done subtly.
Correct. Absolutely. So there were a number of things that were happening in my life like that. And it came to the point where I decided enough was enough. It was becoming uncomfortable, not only for me, but for people in my life. And I knew at that time that I needed to back away from this whole subject matter. I did feel threatened. Nobody ever directly threatened me, but I did feel threatened. And at one point I just said, okay, that's it. I need to back out. So the instruction that I had was at that time, and I didn't write this in the book, and I don't even know if I've shared this in the past, but I made a decision, because my choices were to simply walk away and stop talking to people about it here and try and go back to a normal life until I got called upon in the future, or I could go with them, because there was a time, and I remember it very clearly, having this telepathic communication with them. After this incident, I still had telepathic communication with them for some time after the event in 88. And during this big conversation that we were having, they were saying to me that I could go with them if I wanted. I had that option at that time, and I said no, that I wanted to stay here. So that was really it. And I tried to go back to a very normal life. Strange things always were happening around me, but I did live a normal life, meaning I had a job, I had an apartment. I didn't converse with people who were into UFOs and aliens, metaphysics, spiritualism, nothing. I basically just lived my life and tried to just play the waiting game, because I knew that one day what would happen was they would contact me and tell me that it was time to go to work. And that happened in 2003, where I woke up one morning in early 2003 and knew that I needed to take a particular journey to the southwest in the United States, to the Four Corners area, and that this would be a catalyst to other things that were coming and that they wanted me to do. Because in 1988, they'd actually asked me to, and I agreed, to tell the world about them and give them a basic understanding of who these beings are, so that if and when events would happen in the future, that people would understand who they were and not be afraid. So 2003 is a long jump from, I think, 91. And so it was around that time that I began to just sort of, slowly start writing the book. And then I had very clear instruction in 2007 to have it completed no later than, I think it was November of 2007. It had to be finished and completed by then. And I made the deadline. That's when it was finished. It arrived on my doorstep in November of 2007. So it's been a little bit of a slow process since 2003 to 2007. And then in the past year, I came out with a bang. I just said, okay, the book's out. It's time to start speaking to people. And I've been speaking to whoever and whomever will listen at this point, trying to help them to just have a little bit more of these puzzle pieces that we all have a part of. It's not just me. We all have a little piece of this great puzzle that we're living right now with these extraterrestrials.
So the purpose of them meeting with you, it seems like, was to give you a very strong, very powerful message. Let's talk a bit about that. What was it that they told you and want you to share with people?
The overall message, if you were to encapsulate it, it would be one that they are here watching the world, that they are the caretakers of this world, and that their purpose is to sort of oversee us to ensure that we don't just completely destroy the planet or ourselves, and that really their message is one of peace, and that we need to live in respect to all things. So we need to live in balance with the world. We need to have respect for this earth and respect for one another. And that the way to do that is to really just open our hearts and, not judge one another, start grassroots programs in order to better the environment, even in your own home. It starts with one person creating a situation that helps those around them to join in, and then, the community that you have in your home goes out to the neighbors and to the town you live in, and it just can spread out throughout the entire world. And really, regardless of what nation we're from or where we live, who we live, how we live, we're all one race, and we need to take responsibility for the generations that are coming so that they too have the opportunity to come to this beautiful planet. That's the overall message. And the other, the big message that they have with me is that, is of course with the indigenous people of the earth, that these particular individuals all over the planet who have been here since the beginning of this world have great knowledge that may enable us to make our way into this new peaceful, balanced world, and that it's time for all of us to pay more attention to the guidance and words that they are sharing with us so that it will help guide us into a new life, into a better life. Because right now, human beings, if you ask anyone and you ask them the question, are you happy? For the most part, people will say no. It won't matter if they have money or if they don't. If they're rich or poor, they're not happy because there is nothing in this life that is fulfilling for so many people. Going to work, having a job, coming home, making a payment on something, eating food that has no taste, there's no fulfillment. So we need to go back just a little bit and understand that there is something to be said about working land and having a small garden and creating an environment of balance with everything around you. And that's really the message that they have.
Yeah, to help people get out of this dreadful drone-like existence they live in.
Yes.
Now, did they give you... There are so many things around now, particularly with the Internet. There's the whole 2012 idea, then there's that we're going into sort of potential apocalyptic nightmares. Did they give you specific scenarios and what is going to occur or may occur and what we can do about it?
They did, and that's one of the biggest things that drives me to this point, is that they showed me images of possible cataclysms that would be coming to the planet, and I do mean possible. There were different images that they showed me of massive, absolutely massive earthquakes, and I saw meteors hit the earth. I saw war, solar flares. There was the possibility of any and all of these things had taking place. And so what was made clear to me in all of this is that we as human beings have the power and the ability to change any of these situations, because we are partly the creators of this world with our minds, and regardless of what the situation is, we can change anything through the consciousness of man. So even if it's a meteor that's going to be hitting us, if enough people focused on it, we could push it away. If it was war, well, that's self-explanatory. If enough of us stand up and say, no, we want peace, the war will never happen anywhere. And this is what they made very clear to me and showed me a great deal of. 2012 is this phenomenon that's happening right now. You know, 2012, everyone's talking about it. But 2012 is, from my information, is not necessarily a date for anything. It is simply a guide to where we're going. I was told that if anything, 2010 is going to be a year that is going to potentially hold great catastrophe, and that that would be the year that something would happen. Now, I tell people that these images that I was shown are gifts to us, that in the sense that they're warnings. So if we can change the path that we're on, we can avoid anything. So the best thing that could happen to me is that everything that I ever share is proven completely wrong in that respect, because it means that we've changed our path. So that's fantastic. And 2012 We are changing. As human beings, we are currently in a change. We're in a change mentally. We're in a change physically, emotionally, spiritually, religiously, politically. We are in the greatest change that the planet has ever seen. And this is why it's a fantastic opportunity for us to lay the groundwork today for the future of tomorrow. Because if we have the ability to share with one another from our hearts, anything is possible. And we do not need to be looking at cataclysms and darkness and any of those things. All we need to do is recognize it, accept that they are possibilities, and ask ourselves, do we continue this path towards these things? And if the answer is no, then you make small changes in your life today that will benefit tomorrow. Go green. Don't drive your car every day. Plant a garden. Get your heritage seeds. These things are all very important aspects to our lives that can greatly affect the planet.
Right, and that's basically the purpose of WSLR Radio, actually, is to promote sustainability, self-sufficiency, more of the localized group, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, what we have right now, which is this globalization and get what you want at any cost, it doesn't matter the circumstances. In the book, you talk about very much how you were driven or guided towards connecting with the Hopi Indians.
Yes.
And you describe your meetings there. What did you learn from them?
Well, in my interactions with the Hopi, you know, when I go to see them, I'm not learning about their ceremonies and you know, their secrets or anything like that. I think I have more of a sharing experience when I go there. And what I learn from them is that the information that was given to me, some of the information that was given to me by these tall blondes, is absolutely identical to the Hopi creation story, the blue star prophecy that the Hopi have. You know, this type of information that was shared with me. So that's what I learned from them, is that a number of things that were shared with me on board that craft in 1988 are identical to the Hopi people. So when I go to Hopi and I spend time with them, I'm just simply sharing with them the way that I'm sharing with you, or the way I'm sharing with my best friend over a cup of coffee. We don't sit down and try and explain things to each other. It's more of just a friendship that I have with some of the Hopi people there. But it is very relevant, because the language that these beings spoke to me in at one point, after many years, you know, in 2004, from 1988 to 2004, is when I found out that the language these aliens spoke to me in was Hopi. So that's very relevant, because it's telling me that these beings have been around for a very long time. So the idea that people have is that they're all the government and you're being, you know, that it's evil and bad and all of these silly things. It's just another anomaly thrown into the mix just to confuse people. These beings have been around since the beginning of time. That's what I've learned. And that it's been proven to me, it's been confirmed to me by the Hopi. The Hopi have actually confirmed a great deal of the teachings and information that was shared with me. They've confirmed it. And not even by sitting down and teaching me anything, but just simply by conversation, or when I went online the very first time after coming through their lands, was when I realized that all of this information was exactly the same. So it's very relevant to our planet, because if these beings have had contact with indigenous people since the beginning of time, and they truly are the stewards of this earth, then we need to pay much more attention to them. But I myself do not speak on behalf of any nation, and that includes the Hopi people.
That's interesting to hear, because I was actually going to ask you that as well, that there are a lot of people out there who say that these are government tricks that they're playing, which I'm sure I wouldn't doubt that some of these encounters can be. Some of the craft people see are government craft that we don't know about, but you really do feel that the people you encountered with, they were who they said they were. It wasn't some sort of huge hologram being played on you.
Absolutely, because and there, I believe that for many reasons. First of all, because these beings have been known to these indigenous groups since, you know, for thousands of years. So I'm sorry, our current governments haven't gone back thousands of years. Mm-hmm. They couldn't have been the ones responsible for taking care of these indigenous thousands of years ago. So it's almost ludicrous to believe that. But at the same time, even for myself, I must always question everything. So every encounter I have, I question the encounter, where it's coming from, who is it, what's the information that's being shared. I do know, or I do feel, I should say, I do feel that some of these encounters that people are having are definitely not from other worlds, and that they are being manipulated. And I've spoken to one in particular individual. I don't want to give any details on it, but I did spoke to one individual years ago, and when he was telling me about this, all I felt was I wanted to be sick, because everything that he was telling me sounded like some sort of a ruse where he was mind manipulated completely. And I couldn't say anything to him because even though he was saying these things that were so crystal clear that he was mind manipulated, he himself could not see it at all. And I didn't want to create even more hardship in his life. If he was meant to put it all together, then he would. So yes, there's definitely different, quote, programs that are happening right now. The ones that I have contact with have only talked about peace, the environment, coming together as community, and working together in order to help the earth and help ourselves. I don't see possibly how that could be these other forces,
the dark forces
manipulating me.
It's
ridiculous.
Like
it. Yes. And this is something that I'd like to say to the listeners, which is so important regarding this subject matter. You really need to be logical and calm and, you know, do a little bit of research. And whatever you do, regardless of whether they're listening to me or to, you know, someone else, never jump to conclusions. Just simply ask some more questions. And put the pieces together on your own, because really that's what needs to happen on an individual basis.
Now, you had your big encounter in 1988. Also, again, in your book, Blue Star, you talk about, I think it was when you were in Nevada, correct me if I'm wrong about that, and you said you asked for a sign or you wanted to see something and you saw some orbs in the sky. Can you describe those for us?
Oh, yes, I was in Nevada. I was at the UFO Congress conference that happens in Laughlin, Nevada. And I actually will be attending that event this year at the end of February again. And I was at this conference, and I went out to poolside to try and catch some beautiful sun. And I was laying there, and a couple of times, once before I left, again when I was at the conference, I had asked for them to show themselves to this group of people, meaning the people at the conference. And, you know, who knows if my requests are ever going to be answered or not, but every once in a while they surprise me. So I'm laying at poolside, and I hear this screaming in my head that said, "Pay attention to the sky, we are coming out." So I did that, and I thought, oh, it's ridiculous. What am I looking at? It's so bright out, I can barely see. And these round balls started floating across the sky, and they're probably about the size of softballs. And there was two of them. They stayed in formation, meaning the wind didn't blow them around or move them or anything. They were moving very, very, very slowly. And I actually have a couple of pictures of them. It doesn't look like much at all. But when you hear the whole story, you'll look at it twice. So they just look like round balls of a round softball, sort of greenish in color, that came out and was floating past the building. The building, I think, had, oh my gosh, now I can't remember, 20 floors, 15 floors, and it was just near the top of the building. So that's how high they were. And I was on the second floor at the time on the pool. Then I ran across the pool deck to have another gentleman who was also at the conference, the UFO Congress conference. And what he did was I got him to jump up, and he actually saw some of these orbs as well, that looks like stars that they look like a star in the middle of the day, and they were in a V formation, and they just floated past the pool on the second floor. They stayed in formation, and it was like three stars. I have a picture of that also. And then there was, looking off into the direction of the sun, there was something in the sun as well. You could barely see it, though. You'd have to, you know, practically burn your eyes in order to see what was there. But this individual did see what I saw.
And was that the only time you've seen that, or have you seen it since?
These orbs I've seen a number of times, quite a few, actually. I saw them then at poolside. I saw them on my way back home when I was at the airport. I saw them with my sister once in our hometown. I had shared with her how, you know, not to be afraid, that if they showed themselves, and within a minute another individual who knew nothing about me and nothing about UFOs, aliens, nothing, started jumping up and down saying, oh my God, it's a UFO, it's a UFO. And then I've seen them countless times. I mean, I'd have to really sit down and count, because it's been a few times. Sometimes they've had messages for me.
Telepathically?
Yes. And then other times I've just seen them. But if you pay attention to the sky at night, and you see, for example, a what you believe is a satellite, and, you know, don't turn away, because that satellite may not be a satellite. You have to watch it till the very end, because every once in a while you'll see one go past, and all of a sudden they're going to change direction and do a 45-degree angle. And that most certainly is not a satellite.
Gosh, I'll definitely start looking. Miriam, we're coming close to the end of our time. I know you were recently in Ecuador with...
Yes.
Bill and Kerry from Project Camelot, and also I think George Green was there. What went on there? What did you learn new?
Well, according to George Green, we are definitely moving towards an complete economic shutdown, and that governments all over the world are going broke, and that he kept saying that there was going to be banking holidays, as he called them. It was a rather dire outlook from George Green, and from the people that arrived, it was quite extraordinary. 70 people from around the world came to this little town in Ecuador to talk about how they could create a new focus for themselves in finding out what was going on. Really, what it came down to was that each individual is going to do what they need, what they feel is best. And they need to listen to the direction that they're having from inside in order to know what to do, because there's so many ideas. From George Green, there was a very dire situation. From myself, it was that if we can come together as humanity, we can change anything. From Kerry and Bill, it was that more and more people are beginning to come forward and sharing their experiences, and that disclosure can actually happen if enough people continue to come forward. So it was a lot of different directions from everyone.
So basically quite a positive feeling, though, other than George.
Yes. George gave an amazing talk, and it was fascinating, but the direction from him was very dire, yes.
Right.
And it was a great conference, and people left there with a sense of... many people left there with a sense of joy, believing that we can all just work together and change any situation. But also to be prepared for any type of situation. I think that that was the bottom line.
You see, personally, I have always welcomed the idea of a collapse of the economic world that we live in, because I don't see any other way that we can change this awful, as I mentioned earlier, sort of drone-like existence that people live, where they're born, they go to school, they get in debt, they work to pay their debts, and they die. So I don't see any way of breaking that trap without it all collapsing. The only thing that will hopefully happen is that people will listen to people like you and the many out there who are trying to get us to change our way of life and be prepared so that if it does or when it does collapse, we're not left literally out freezing in the cold with nothing to eat.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree with everything that you just said. That's the point of it, is to understand that we need to take responsibility for ourselves, and by doing so, we take responsibility for the earth and each other. It's a very easy step. Get some heritage seeds, start planting a garden, start canning, start taking responsibility for yourself. If you do that one thing, you save all of that shipping of all these foods, you connect with the earth, you share with your neighbor, you have more respect for the water. All of these things take place. Just plant a garden with heritage seeds. They must be heritage seeds. And educate yourself.
Right. Well, Miriam, I also just want to say before we go that I saw, when I first saw your interview on Project Camelot the night it came out, I watched that, and the next day I was out walking a friend's dog the next evening,
yes.
And I turned a corner and this giant blue ball moved across the sky. It wasn't even that fast. It just sort of very gracefully arched across the sky in front of me and disappeared. It was absolutely huge. It was this beautiful, deep, rich blue. And I just stood there in absolute awe. I stared at it. Me and the dog just stopped in the middle of the street. And, you know, I was just absolutely thrilled. And then I went on, and it was only a few days later, I can be a bit slow at times, that I sort of put two and two together, and I thought, oh, I was watching Miriam's interview, and the name of her book is Blue Star, so I was very excited about that.
That is a beautiful story to share, Emily. Thank you, because I've actually had a few, you know, a number of other people have sightings and things after they've met me or after reading my book and so forth. And I think, you know, Emily, the reason why I'm doing this is to simply share what I can in order to help people recognize things. And had you have not maybe watched my interview, maybe you wouldn't have recognized it as being as much as it was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this is about, simply about sharing. So thank you. That's a beautiful story.
It was a very beautiful experience. Miriam, in closing, what would you like to say to the listeners?
I would like to say that I am very grateful that humanity in all forms is beginning to open their minds and hearts, and that by simply tuning in and listening to someone like myself, it means that we all have hope. And I want to thank everyone and ask them to educate themselves on seeds, what's happening to the planet, and get yourself some heritage and heirloom seeds. And thank you.
And for more information, people can go to your website, alienbluestar.com. Your book can also be bought from there, Alien Blue Star, Fulfilling Prophecy. I highly recommend it. I've read it. I absolutely loved it. It's very, very easy but informative to read. So
thank you.
Thank you, Miriam, and we look forward to hearing more from you. Do you think there would ever be another book in the works?
Yes. That has been rumbling around in my mind for a little while now, so I believe that there is another one on its way. It may take me a little while, but there may be another one coming.
Well, yeah. Good. Hopefully not as long as the last one, then.
No, it won't be. Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam. Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.